everyone. Welcome to Red Eyes Radio, and thank you for tuning in today. It's great to be able to speak with you again. I hope you are doing well today. I'm Henrik from Sweden, and I hope you had a great Easter, by the way, and that spring soon kicks in properly for us in the north. I also wanted to say thank you for all the kind emails and positive feedback about the program that we've been getting. We do have a tough time replying to everyone. However, if we did, we wouldn't be doing much else. But we say thank you to everyone, not only for listening, but also for taking the time writing to us. We do appreciate it. Thank you. Also, don't forget that you can find us and connect on Facebook, YouTube, Google+, and Twitter. We have all the links from redeyescreations.com, where you also can read more about us, follow our news, and of course, listen regularly to our radio program. You can also discuss the program with other members, share your opinions, your comments about the show on redeyesmembers.com, where we also have our full archives. Today we're talking with Dale Hurd, a CBN News veteran. That's the Christian Broadcasting Network. Dale began his journalism career in 1982 at a daytime-only AM radio station in Kalamazoo, Michigan. In 1987, he joined the CBN radio network as a program host and news anchor. Since joining CBN News, Dale has reported extensively from Western Europe, as well as China, Russia, and Central and South America. Now, recently, Dale has been doing some great reports about the Scandinavian situation that we've been trying to highlight now for many years. He's been brave and outspoken in his critique, both about the diminishing freedom of speech in Sweden, the issue of political one-sidedness and stifling political correctness, but also the very problematic issue of mass immigration into the Scandinavian countries, particularly Sweden. Today, we're going to spend an hour talking about these issues from his perspective, some of his latest reports, and also about how some of the issues are echoed over in the USA as the world gets more and more homogenized and turned into the very same New World Order political cesspool. Welcome, Dale. Thank you very much for taking the time talking with us today. Hope you're doing well over this, Easter, not Easter Saturday, but we're approaching Easter here soon. So I hope you're doing well, Dale.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And the weather is terrible again. This has been our worst winter here in where I live in Virginia in, I think, probably 30 years. So,
oh, boy. Well, that's not a fun when you're waiting for the spring and it never comes. I know how that feeling is.
It's coming back. Yeah, I understand you guys did pretty well, though. Yeah, winter.
It hasn't been that harsh. It's interesting. It's I don't know if it's because of the Gulf Stream or something else, but yeah, it's been a little bit milder, and it's an early spring as well in Sweden, which is great. But
I'm happy for you.
In our ongoing series here, obviously, to continue to critique the madness really out of the Scandinavian countries, with special focus on my homeland, Sweden. It's obviously great to have you with us. Someone has reported for CBN on Sweden, Norway, Denmark. Mm-hmm. And seeing how these countries are basically going down the drain, all the while it's being reported that it's among the greatest place on earth to live in. So it's a very painful process to me to watch, but I've really been enjoying a lot of your reports from there. And there's so many things we can discuss of what the problems are. But before we get into that, tell us how you ended up doing reports on Scandinavia. And I understand you have some roots in Sweden as well.
Yeah, this last trip, I was just getting distress calls on Facebook from friends in Scandinavia. You've got to come over and do this. It's crazy, etc. And sending me links. So I decided to come over. But yeah, my great-grandfather was Swedish. He was from Kalmar. John Melberg was the family name, and then as he went through Ellis Island, they changed it to Johnson. But
really, that's funny. Yeah. Why did
so,
they do that?
And, well, yeah, it's the American thing about not being real in tune with other cultures and languages, and just especially in that time, Americans didn't care much at all about the rest of the world, and you do things our way, and we're going to change your name.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. And his wife was named, they say Maya, which perhaps was Maria. I'm not sure. And so my grandmother, Viola, was raised in a Swedish house in the U.S., in fact, in a little neighborhood called Swedetown in northern Michigan, which northern Michigan looks a lot like Sweden. It's really interesting.
Right.
Huh. So, yeah. And but that wasn't really related to my work over there. I just, I go around Europe. I'm looking for, you know, I'm covering political correctness and multiculturalism, which I think has failed utterly, and it's now creating all kinds of bad fruit in Europe, chiefly tribalism, in which nations don't unify. Their future, as I did a story about France recently, the French keep talking, you know, the French dissidents who feel this immigration model is completely wrong keep using the word Lebanon as France's future, a fragmented country in which interest groups square off against each other with weapons.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's just crazy. If that's, I mean, it's obvious, you can see that the clash of civilization, that political ideology, that issue is kind of coming to life to a certain degree. And I've always been curious to know, why they actually are enforcing this type of policy upon Europe, and the way that the people have never been engaged in having any decision-making on this. Do you think it's just idealism? It's something which is, they're doing it out of a sense of trying to achieve something, doing something right in the world, and then at the same time it fails miserably, or do you think that it's something more behind the mass immigration we see into Europe?
I think it started with one reason, and now it has become, there are two reasons now. I mean, the original reason was a sort of white guilt, and people have debated where this comes from, or white Christian European guilt. Was it because we didn't do enough? Some say it was because of the Holocaust. But there's also, as you know, this sort of self-hatred of Western culture and a veneration of all non-Western cultures as being better than ours. But then it's nuanced because, as you know, in Sweden, they venerate these non-Western immigrants, but they also don't want anything to do with them. You know, they keep them segregated. So, But then it has turned into... we can import a new voting bloc because we're losing the white working class. So we need, especially in France, where 90%, a Pew poll stated that 93% of Muslim immigrants voted for François Hollande
right. In
the last election. So Now it's become, and the Democrats in America see this now, I believe, with immigration from Central America.
I think we had the same story coming out of England. I linked it up a while back. The British politicians were talking about how immigrants were better citizens than the native Brits were. It's kind of in the same veneer there, in a way that it's a safe voter base, I guess, for the more left-wing faction within politics, which is, of course, their job, right? To remain in power, to do whatever they need to do to remain elected. And if this is going to be a bloc that it's always going to lean in that direction politically, then it's just win-win for them, right?
Yep.
Now, tell us a little bit about how you have been seeing, I don't know if you had any perception per se before you went to Sweden, if you heard anything from your grandparents about how it's going to, how the country was or whatnot, but when you came over there and visited, I don't know when you started going over, if that was in the 90s or 2000s or something like that, but was it a culture shock to you? Did you you saw something you didn't expect?
Well, this probably isn't interesting to people, but I realized how Swedish my grandmother's house was in the U.S. when I walked into Swedish homes, especially when I was in rural Sweden with the fenced in yard where at one point they had chickens, and et cetera, and the dishes that were served and so forth. But I felt a disconnect from Swedes. Now, my Swedish grandmother married a very flamboyant Scotsman, and that's where I got her name of Hurd, in Detroit. And so, perhaps that's why. But my Swedish family had the typical Swedish traits she was very demure and indirect and humble in the extreme, didn't want to stand out, etc. But, I have to bring up, while I think of it, and maybe you can explain this, what I don't quite understand is coupling that sort of national trait with what seems to be, and some have used this word, and I don't want to pick on the Swedes because the U.S. has plenty of problems and we can talk about that later, but the sort of a narcissism in Swedes about their country and thinking that it's the most modern nation, as the program was called, you know.
Right.
The greatest nation. I don't quite get that.
It is a very interesting contradiction. I definitely agree with you. It's something which I'm trying to figure out as well, because as soon as you have the law of Jante or Jante law, which basically states you do not stand out. You're no special in the collective. It's a very much a collectivist kind of approach to things. But exactly within that, you have a very staunch pride, I guess, to a certain extent, over the fact that they do live in the best country in the world. But as soon as it comes to identifying with that culture, as soon as you're coming to, kind of wearing that more publicly or something like that, forget about it. You know, you're not going to get that. I remember very clearly back in the 90s how they destroyed Swedish national identity and heritage, really, at the same time by associating with racism. They associated it with all the negative things you can imagine. And then at the same time, this was when we're going into the European Union. So you realize that, okay, they did this in order to try to break down that sense of culture. But then at the same time, if you do challenge them on the political things or if you challenge them on the taxes or something like that, generally, you're right, you get a tremendous, defense response that kicks in, that kind of, you end up talking with the talking points that the politicians have mentioned to people. So it is an interesting contradiction. I'm not quite sure why that is or how that actually gets together, but you're right, yeah.
And there is plenty to be proud of if you're Swedish. There are plenty of accomplishments, but there's a lot of weirdness to me as an American, and a lot of stuff that I think is going to end really badly, like the wanting kids in preschool all the time, and some wanting that from age one. How widely is that held? I'm asking you, Henry.
Oh, boy. Good question.
Does that vary from expert to expert? But I hear about this push to want kids in preschool 5 days a week from age one, if possible.
That's just amazing. I mean, that's insane.
That's not news. That's not news to you, is it?
It kind of is a little bit. But I've heard that they want to push it down in the ages. And I obviously know all about the banning of homeschooling. And trying to keep kids longer in school in the day, keeping them basically to a kind of a work schedule, so that from 8 to 4 at least, 8 to 5, they need to be in school to get accustomed to, being educated and being a good worker kind of thing. But no, this is actually somewhat news to me. So that's amazing. Wow.
Well, then perhaps it's just a child, quote unquote, experts advocating this. But I went to the Åland Islands in Finland to interview the leaders of the Swedish homeschool movement. They don't live in Sweden anymore.
That's right.
They had to run away or lose their children. I've done stories on educational freedom, mostly in Germany, because of the German Jugendamt, which was formed under Hitler and is a local town-by-town agency that is almost autonomous. In terms of defying the courts and so forth and taking kids for all kinds of reasons. And especially in Germany, it looks like a child trafficking industry with Jugendamt.
But, wow.
And I didn't see that in Sweden, but I saw a mechanism that was even tougher than in Germany in terms of, I mean, is there educational freedom in Sweden? I didn't find it because no. I saw that the private schools now have to teach a state curriculum.
Exactly. That's always been my point. It doesn't matter how, people have complained on that there's, private school or private profit, I guess, out of that, those kinds of institutions. But at the same time, it doesn't matter because you have a state curriculum, as you say, that is completely homogenized. You're not going to get any diversity or difference in the educational system anyway. So what does it matter, really? But that's a very indicative, I think, of the overall mentality. I remember hearing some of the professional politicians speaking about this, and they were kept talking about how they were so afraid that the bias of the parents would be passed down to the children.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that the parents are a threat. And it was pointed out to me by an expert in Sweden that you're going to have a generation of young people who went through this daycare stuff that only saw their parents on the weekends, and they don't know how to parent because they were never parented.
Oh my God.
You know, and I don't want to overplay child mental illness in Sweden because I haven't looked into it heavily, but I see the anecdotal stories that mental illness is on the rise among Swedish young people. I don't know if that's true.
Well, I definitely think psychology-wise, anyway, that's going to be huge numbers of problems in the future, which is very much unaccounted for. I mean, again, you mentioned it in one of your reports, Dale, that Sweden is a political laboratory. And I definitely agree with that idea that it's very much untested and unproven, yet at the same time, they have this very scientific view that everything we're doing is perfectly, you know, studied and normal, and it's all going to work out fine. But we have no idea what the consequences are going to be 10, 15, 20 years from now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and a sort of belief in the future as like a national creed or something.
Yeah.
It's a very unique country, I'll tell you that.
It is, and it's interesting that then that the particular model is being exported to the rest of the world. And before we carry on and talk a little bit more about some of the clashes that occurs with the immigration in Sweden now, the media climate is also another very interesting point, which you detailed in one of your latest report in terms of how some of the dissidents then have been treated. We have had some of the people you interviewed on the program as well, like Mikael Jalving and Ingrid Dahlqvist as well. And the problem there, of course, is that it lacks complete perspective. It's very much a one-sided view that you do get in the media in Sweden. I think that that's causing a lot of problems as well. And we're really seeing a boot on free speech, which is sad because it's a country that has had a long tradition of free speech. So it's very much a theater, I think, for the international scene, and people who never visited or been there don't really realize how bad it is. What would you say about the media in Sweden, Dale?
I think it's pretty typical of, well, I mean, it's like the media in France. I can only compare it. Britain has a freer media, more diversity. It looks like maybe I'm going to butcher the problem, but it's a classic left-wing takeover of the media, and they completed the job. And there's, you know what I realized early on is that tens of millions of Americans would be considered extreme right in Sweden. I mean, half of the Republican Party or more would be considered extreme right in Sweden. Am I wrong?
No.
or fascist, or, you know, would need someone to go to their door with a baseball bat. So
it's true. Yeah. I mean, I remember one of the, well, the moderate party is called right wing in Sweden, but of course they're very far from being right. The political spectrum has been moved so far left that there is a kind of a myopic view of the whole political spectrum in Sweden. It's very narrowed in that regard. But I remember that one of the more so-called right-wing politicians, Carl Bildt, out of he's the foreign minister in Sweden right now, and he was over in the U.S. This was many years ago, but he was going over to the U.S. and he was speaking to an audience there about the importance of workers' union. I think he was booed off the stage as being a communist. So it was just so funny to see that. It's like, wow, there you realize how how different it is, you know.
But you're right that the American left. We could talk at length about the problems in America and the mindset of the American left. The American left is basically ashamed of America, and if you've been to America, you get a little bit of everything. And there's a lot of kish. There's a lot of cultural disasters and weird looking people. And guess what? They're people living like they want to live. So we just let them go. But, the left is ashamed of this. They want to regulate and pretty up America. They want a European style government and European style healthcare because all their European friends are so smart and so cultured. And, it's some kind of inferiority complex in the left to want to be like Europe, to make the U.S. like Europe. And we're on our way, thanks to President Obama.
Well, what I appreciate when I've been visiting America is just as you say, the diversity that you get there, the idea that you can live still very much, although it's been hugely restricted. I mean, if we're going to talk about any kind of freedom in America, we have to go back 100 years or something, you know, if not even more in some cases. But there is an expression of that diversity there. And as you say, in that situation, you do get some catastrophe, something that goes really, really wrong. But at the same time, you get things that get really, really right as well, you know. So it's that idea that, do you want to homogenize the living conditions? I mean, and that's been like the playbook in Sweden, really, of standardizing living, the whole concept of the folkhem, the folk home, that this is how people in Sweden should live. I mean, it was they knocked down all the old buildings in certain, you know, around certain cities and city places, and created these the million program with these high rise shoe boxes on top of each other, these ugly project buildings and everything else. And there was people who, I remember in the Gothenburg area, who actually committed suicide because their beautiful home area had been completely destroyed by the government, and these ugly buildings came up in its stead. And that's very much the mentality. They think that we're doing something good, we're doing something right, this is for your betterment, but it's like they don't have a connection really to what people want and how they want to live their own lives, and that they should be able to decide this for themselves, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that goes again, which we may want to talk about now or later, that the whole control mechanism impulse, the control impulse in the post-war and the baby boom generation to want to control people's lives. It's really extraordinary, you know.
Tell us more about that. You talked about that a little bit before here, before we began the 68th, you know, the generation and how they're becoming the elite today, right?
Yeah. Well, one of our journalists in America wrote about the generation that sacrificed in World War II, and he called his book the Greatest Generation, because they gave so much, especially Americans, to fight in a European war, but also in the Pacific. And you know, all I can think of in a book about the baby boomers, the 68ers, is the worst generation. I mean, come on. They're from the multicultural experiments to the control stuff, you know, I don't, but just trying to roll back freedom, regulations in this country, you know, regulations in all kinds of areas that just have no business. And I hope that there is, that the next generation, my kids, basically undo everything that my generation tried to do with all of this control, hating Western civilization. And, you know, you don't have to consciously believe you hate Western civilization. Your actions speak louder than your words.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, all the problems in the world is, at this stage, is basically blamed on people who are kind of left to their own devices, right? That if you look at the media, the entertainment and everything else, it's, you can see this dialogue in America as well, right? That all the things that are to blame is for concepts like the free market, right? Capitalism and just these runaway corporations and everything else. How do you view something like that, that kind of debate, when it's obvious that you realize that these major corporations and the creating of the corporate state, which is very much something we have in Sweden too, by the way, even more so than in America, because again, we don't have the diversity. So we have this kind of huge monopolies that comes out of that environment, but nonetheless, that these they could never get so big that they do with the aid of government, that it's actually regulation that works in their favor, and they very much managed to control you know, the market in that kind of way. How do you view that?
Right, and you're talking about what we call corporatism, government and big business in bed together, so to speak. The government bailout of GM, government help for all kinds of huge corporations that don't need it. It's not capitalism. I mean, I'm a capitalist, but you know, you almost have to explain what you mean, because people have confused corporatism with capitalism. And so forth. So, yeah. I mean, I believe in the liberating power of the free market, but where do we have that nowadays? I guess in some small country somewhere. I don't know. I mean, there's so much regulation everywhere. throughout the Western world. That I don't know that there's an example of that anymore. And yeah, there were excesses in the early days of capitalism, terrible working conditions and so forth that needed to be addressed, but the mechanism to reform it never stopped, and it's still going, and as you know. And
is that about control, do you think, as well? To I mean, I've seen that from at least a European perspective, that it's very much not about you know, destroying the market. They've realized that it's just too powerful of a force, so they can't, they have, you know, it's a civil edict. If you can't beat them, join them, right? So you have to try to get control over it, and that's why you saw a certain direction, for example, by the Tory party. Tony Blair and Bill Clinton adopted that very much same idea of the third way, right? You marry these two concepts, and then you can propel forward. But then the question is, okay, but in what direction are we moving? Are we moving towards less regulation, or are we moving towards more regulation, right? And I think we all know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we had the terrible TARP bailouts, which were bailing out big banks that needed to fail. And, you know, as someone said during the market crash and the TARP bailouts, by doing that, we just turned a bad month into a bad decade.
Yeah, exactly.
But I remember cocktail party discussion. I didn't read this anywhere. Were we becoming an economy like a fascist nation, like Nazi Germany, where you sort of had capitalism, but it was still ultimately controlled by the government? I don't know.
What do you view overall spirituality in Sweden? We can talk about that in the Christian context. We can talk about that in a prior belief in something higher. A move away from such an ideology towards a more atheist kind of scientific view. I think the state religions have been abolished one by one in Sweden, or in the Nordic countries, I mean, in Scandinavia as well, during the last 10 years or so. Is that something that is a problem at the root cause for you as well, from your perspective, Dale, that as we move away from those things, we lose a certain portion of a connectivity to something which is very important to human beings, but these political ideologies don't have kind of understood that yet? What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm a Christian theist, so I believe that Christians are not just like animals, only a little more evolved. And I think that we're created beings in the image of God. And I think that when you try to rip that need for communion with God or to worship away from people, they'll just substitute other stuff like the environment, which to me is obviously some kind of spiritual experience for people. And I recycle. But I think plastic is a way bigger problem than climate change, okay?
Yeah, and you shouldn't recycle, because we've recently discovered that it's not actually recycling, it's downgrading. And most of the products are using, when they do that process, it's just an amazing story, by the way. It's a side note here, but we researched a little bit of this, that the chemicals that goes into breaking down some of the, you know, the products for recycling or downgrading are actually so poisonous that when you end up using some of the materials, like the recycled tissue paper, toilet paper, what have you, they're actually bad for you because they contain so much chemicals, and you absorb them every time you use it and everything else. So that's a whole scam in itself, actually.
you've just upset my whole day. Now I have to decide what I'm going to do about recycling.
Why not glass? You know, what was wrong with glass,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do think plastic is evil, though.
Sure, I agree. Yeah,
man alive. But as I talk on my probably mostly plastic tablet here, but
oh well. Yeah, well, yeah. we can move in the right direction, right? We have to critique things as they are and attempt to move forward from there, right? We can do the best we can. But how is it, do you think, going to, if we look at the more somewhat atheist view then of Europe, how do you think that's going to clash with Islam, which is on the rise in Europe due to mass immigration into these countries? I think we had in Britain recently, they were beginning to look at versions of Sharia law for the legal system over there. And it's obviously a very strong religious flavor that comes into Europe at that time. How do you think that's going to clash and work out?
Well, you know, I'm with the preface, I'm not a prophet, but I mean, there are certain things that you can observe and sort of predict. I mean, you have Europeans who you know, with cultural self-hatred and a hatred of Christendom, looking with admiration at Muslims. They like they like devout Muslims. They think that's really cool. Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting. Yes.
They think it's stupid for themselves. And, you know, you should go see a psychiatrist if you want to go to church, but it's great that Muslims go to mosque. I find that really fascinating. And so, yeah, you have this spiritual vacuum. You have small numbers, I guess, of Europeans converting to Islam, not a lot, but I don't know. I'm not sure I really understood your question, except that, yeah, there's a big spiritual vacuum in Europe. And a lot of it's funneled into environmentalism because they've actually created a quasi-Christian narrative with, you know, sin and redemption and an apocalypse.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right.
I interviewed a French author who wrote a book about this, and a philosopher, and I can't think of his name. Yeah.
I'd like to hear who that is. That's very interesting. I mean, I've seen that model very much in the political movements that we do have, that it's people don't realize that it's actually, they are fundamentally attracted to a sense of, you know, purpose and spirituality, a higher calling, a higher force, yeah. What have you. And so this is being used to manipulate people on a political level now. That's very interesting. I like that.
Yeah, and of course, you know, you get into carbon credits and people say, well, that's like indulgences in the Catholic Church, you know, you're buying your way out of sin. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
So what do you make of the economic system in countries like Sweden? And we can see the Nordic model being exported to the rest of the world. We talked about this a little bit already, of course, but one of the hot debates is, of course, the healthcare system, the welfare system. There's been discussions like basic income in Switzerland, and the ideas mm-hmm. were brought up. I saw the report yesterday from PBS, I think it was, that also talked favorably about these kinds of concepts. And the question, of course, how this would play out in the long run. But if we just for a moment look at the healthcare issue alone, and moving towards a Nordic model on that front. First of all, something is never free, right? They call it free healthcare or universal right. healthcare, which is that concept that it's free is a lie in itself. But I've always questioned the quality of the service that we get from the government, which is something that's been decreasing in Sweden for the last 20 years radically, and it's just going down the drain in that regard. Do you think that they'll be able to pull that off in America at all? I mean, it's happening kind of with the Affordable Healthcare Act, with Obama Act, but it's much more expensive if you look at the actual prices for it, which means that Americans are actually going to see how much they need to pay out of pocket for these services, as opposed to what we have in Sweden, where the government just takes the money and you really have no idea where it's going. So what do you think about the Obamacare issue?
Well, you know this medical disorder, in English it's Munchausen by proxy syndrome,
right?
This psychological problem where a parent or someone will infect a loved one so that they can rescue them.
Right. Yeah.
That's what we did in our medical system. Government wrecked it with regulation. It's been ages since, if ever, that we had a free market medical system, you know, really let the markets liberate and reduce costs in the medical system, because Congress kept interfering and regulating until, you know, it got worse and worse in some respects. And okay, now we made it so sick, now we have to with Obamacare. And Obamacare is outrageous, and I hope it's repealed. But I mean, we have big problems in the United States with our political system, because you have, you know, Alan Simpson, the former senator from Wyoming, you may have heard this, said we have two parties in Washington, the evil party and the stupid party. The evil party are the Democrats, and he meant as much. He wasn't a Democrat, so he didn't like them, but he also meant they're very diabolical, but they're just very, they play to win, and the Republicans don't. You know, the Republicans are sort of, a lot of Americans identify with him, but they never go for the knockout punch when they could, like the Democrats are trying to do right now. Democrats would like to make a one-party system in the United States and do it through legalizing immigrants and some other things. But what was my point? That we were talking about Obamacare.
Yeah.
And my point was that after Obama, if we have a Republican president, we have no guarantee that they'll get rid of Obamacare, even though Republicans probably could. Some people say it's now the tentacles are too far into the system to ever get rid of it. But they could rename it. We have Medicaid, which is, yes, Europeans, we have free health care for poor people.
Exactly. Yeah, you already have it. It's already socialized. Yeah.
I know you picture people dying out of emergency rooms, but we have healthcare for poor people, and we could just keep that. And that people said we should have done that to begin with, just enhanced Medicaid. And but you know, the Republicans want to be loved, and they've moved toward the center, they've moved toward the left, and there's something about the air in Washington that what it does to politicians, I don't know. they go to Washington and most of them change. And so
maybe it's something with the underground shopping malls where they can pick up diamonds for, you know, pennies on the dollar, right?
What is that? I don't know about that.
I heard some stories about that they have like, you know, huge amounts of, well, kickbacks, really, I guess, at their disposal for easy money, you know.
Well, they get, you know, they leave Washington very wealthy. That's true. They come in not wealthy and they leave very wealthy.
Yeah, exactly. We were looking into the numbers the other day because we were making a little commentary on this, and I think the bronze tier of Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, he said on a program that you could. Would be about the price of your cell phone bill, he said, Obama. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, you look at the average cell phone bill in America, it was like $60 to $90, I believe. And mm-hmm. The bronze tier purchasing of Obamacare was for the youngest person, the cheapest thing was between $200 to $300 per month.
Right. When they have almost no medical problems and they don't even want insurance.
Exactly. Exactly. How are people not seeing this, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I'd love to, you know, we're talking about Sweden, and I want the Swedes to understand that I'd love to talk about the problems in America. I mean, how stupid is it to adopt a European model when the Europeans are thinking we need to get rid of this?
Exactly.
We've just discovered it. Come on. That's really stupid.
Exactly. No, it's funny in that way. It seems to be a switch kind of thing happening a little bit. I mean, the moderate party in Sweden has moved in certain areas towards, I think the corporate taxes are lower in Sweden than they are in the US now, for example. There's a couple of things that people brought to my attention, which shows that it's kind of it's switching sides. It almost feels like to a certain degree, people in Scandinavia are getting more and more tired of the socialist welfare state that has been, you know, and endemic there now for so many decades. And they want something different. They're moving away from it. And the majority of Americans now, they want something European. It's the old edict, right? The grass is always greener on the other side. You just want to get something different all the time, whether it's good or bad, right?
Yeah. But I've, you know, France is in big trouble because France is sort of trapped. I mean, Sweden has reformed and lower taxes, and the French do it as a feint, as a ruse to get. It's my opinion, but to get businesses not to leave, they don't really mean it, and they'll raise taxes next week. I mean, they're in real trouble. They've built a mechanism they can't afford anymore. So good for Sweden for lowering taxes. But I'm told, I mean, my observation is that you have no large party that believes in sort of libertarian or market economics.
No,
right?
No, that's true. Yeah. There aren't really any alternatives. See, this is the thing. These days, they form blocks instead, the blocks within the political spectrum. So we do have like, you know, six, seven, eight parties, you know, coming and going a little bit. And those form blocks, which is either, you know, center right or center left kind of thing, or left, left, center right, you know. But it turns, what my point there is that it's also kind of turned into a two-party system, because they go together in alliances with other parties, and then they form, you know, the government in that way. So it's very much the same idea, but we do not have the political spectrum that exists. And I mean, again, America is very much homogenized, just as you said already. It's very much the same, but it's still not to the degree and the diversity, if you will, of what America has, which is kind of ironic when you think that you just have two parties. But that's my assessment of it anyway.
You would think Sweden would be more nimble, be just simply because it's a smaller, more homogenous country than the United States, more nimble to implement changes. I mean, the U.S. is headed into a wilderness. I don't know. And it started, I mean, you know, Ronald Reagan was a great leader, regardless of what you thought of his views. But we haven't had very many, what I would consider great presidents since World War II. You know, Bill Clinton was an effective executive. I didn't agree with all his views. And George W. Bush, I felt, was a disaster. He wrecked the conservative movement. Conservative in the U.S. is for limited government and more family values, a more Christian view of things. And Romney, if he had won, I think would have finished the job, frankly, destroying the conservative movement in the United States, because they're progressives. Bush trying to fix the world. And as I posted the other day, thank you, George W. Bush, for sacrificing our men and women in uniform, sacrificing their lives, destroying families to install Sharia governments in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that amazing that what has happened and the way they've gone into that? But some of it surely has to do with the neocon movement overall. We do have people like Irving Kristol, who kind of come from that small group of kind of Trotskyists, but they're, you know, they claimed they were anti-Soviet, right? But they were Trotskyists that eventually became the New York intellectuals that reformed the Republican Party into what they are today, right?
Yeah, and I just want to be clear that I'm a supporter of Israel. I'm a former neocon, I would say, in my views. And I think it's a case of simply they're Jewish and they became influential because they're well spoken and smart, and they became influential in the conservative movement. And is there too much support for Israel in America? Well, not at the moment. So, as far as foreign intervention, it's beyond Jewishness, and I'm not sure what your point was, it's a progressive vision of the world. We can go around and fix stuff. And no, you can't. And that's as stupid as in the foreign policy sense as socialism. You know, we can re-engineer other countries. Well, maybe if you flatten them, like Japan. But, I mean, you can't just, you know what I'm saying? You can't just invade and can I just say, what does it say about belief in Christian civilization and in the civilizing force? Okay, let's forget about even going to church, okay? But just the values of Christian civilization, you know, brotherly love, helping your neighbor.
Sure.
What does it say that we go into these countries and don't want them to become more Christian? You know, we're going to help you reinstall your Islamic government with child brides or whatever it is, amputations for theft and so forth. And this terrible stuff from Islam, it's just, and, you know, George W. Bush was the pioneer of that, so.
Yeah, and isn't that, I mean, from my point of view, I see that is the creation of the, if there wasn't extremism in that regard to begin with, this kind of policy will certainly exacerbate that particular issue, which is then we come back to that full circle, like, okay, is that the plan? Is that the clash of civilizations that they're seeking? The point that you almost began with, that this kind of localism/tribalism that you see in the world, where you eventually within every country in the world, well, it's beginning in the Western world, of course, Europe and America, perhaps, you're going to have a kind of a civil war in between smaller warring factions on the streets, you know, tribal gang warfare, if you will. That seems to where we're heading, and maybe that's why the defense departments in so many countries are looking at urban warfare, dealing with the population and you know, right, large demographics of like how to disperse crowds and mass arrests and everything else. You know, it's real crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've followed stories about local police departments or sheriffs getting military vehicles. What is that for?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what do they need that for? You know, before we leave interventionism and progressive foreign policy, and boy, we went a long way from Sweden to U.S. foreign policy. But, you know, the whipsaw of that is the U.S. just folding up its tent and going home, and Americans saying enough of this. I mean, we sacrificed a lot and the world didn't change. So what's the point?
Right.
I mean, and in a sense, that is the right foreign policy. I mean, that's my foreign policy now, is that, you know, people have to fight for their own liberty.
Yeah,
you need to die for your liberty and not have someone else do it. Fight for your freedom.
I've always held that view as well. I mean, certainly, no matter how suppressed a group is, it's when you're going to have a third party come into the picture and try to sort it out. It seems like it turns out to a greater catastrophe to a certain extent. It's very difficult, very, very difficult. But at the same time, it's like you have to have a populace have to stand up on their own. They have to, because there is a larger problem in that issue, and that has to do with dependency. Because if you have a population that never, if they never get accustomed to overthrowing their own tyrants, if they never get accustomed to fighting their own battles, eventually you're going to create, that particular people are going to create a dependency, which is in the longer run more dangerous than what it is in the short run to have a tyrant temporarily in place before they've overthrown him, because they are going to be in the future possibly never capable of rising up and organizing in such a manner again, which again goes back to my previous point kind of thing, that it's a larger conspiracy, if you will, to make people dependent on external forces all the time, to never take charge or organize or do something on their own, because it's more important that you just bow down to a greater force, a greater power that comes in and saves you, or, you know, puts their, you know, hand over you and tells you what to do. So I think although it's a difficult debate and a you know, emotionally difficult one to have, because when it comes to suppression of people and, you know, genocides and all kinds of things that we've seen throughout history, it's more important that the people rise up on their own. I definitely agree with that issue, you know?
Yeah, well said.
Now, let's see if there's a couple other things here we can talk about, Dale, before we wrap things up for this time. Where do you see America as going then here in the future, and how things going to play out? Again, we're, of course, looking into the crystal ball a little bit and speculating here, but is America going to have another resurgence of a more, you know, sound both foreign policy, but also just economic situation, or does America have to kind of play out the desire that it seems to have right now to move into a more of a European direction when it comes to the political system? How what's going to happen, do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening. The president is probably going to lose the Senate in the next election, and so it'll be in Republicans' hands. But at the same time, the Republican Party is at war with itself, libertarians versus progressives, and the progressives are the establishment, and in many cases view libertarian Republicans as a bigger enemy than the Democrats. They have more in common with the Democrats than with the libertarian wing of the Republican Party. So this is a big disaster. It's a big windfall for the Democrats, for these two sides to be at war with each other. And that's going to mitigate any kind of sort of little mini revolution in government that libertarian-minded people in the United States would like to have, because right now the reins of power are in the hands of progressives. The Democrat Party is entirely progressive, and half of the Republican Party and most of its leadership is progressive. So But what changes everything is who is president of the United States. The president is the de facto leader of their party. And no one ever pronounced this, I don't think. It's just the way it happens. And so if a Ted Cruz or, boy, don't hold my feet to the fire on these names because I'm not that heavily into domestic politics, but let's say Rand Paul or someone was president, that could change everything in the Republican Party. And a lot of these scoundrels that are hounding libertarians perhaps would be thrown out. Short of that, we're headed into the woods economically, you know, and by some measures, our debt is worse or as bad as Greece's. So, you know, we have a still have a vibrant business sector, and the economy's growing by small fits. So it's not exactly like Greece at all, but. You know, I don't know. People still, you know, I said in France, they talk about Lebanon. In the U.S. at cocktail parties, sometimes they talk about Argentina and Brazil as our future. It's sort of a dissipated big country that just did stupid stuff economically and is now economically weak. And the U.S. and the world moves off the dollar and we're suddenly left holding the bag.
Right.
And we're suddenly very poor. And that could happen. I wish I could give you a better answer.
We'll of course just have to see how the developments are now. Also, one question here, a little bit more about Sweden than what you see there. I mean, we saw riots in Sweden last summer in the suburbs of Stockholm. We've had regular kind of riot environments and cars torch and everything else around Malmö as well, the suburbs there. Of course, very much a disconnect between bringing in large sections of immigrants and then kind of not doing anything about the issue. The unemployment for the youth in Sweden is really, really high. And at some point you have to just ask that question, you know, how can you, at what stage do you continue to bring in people and still cannot help them and still keep on emptying the coffers of the nation, you know, to try to do something about it. And then of course we've had people speaking up about those very issues, in Sweden, and they get absolutely hounded in the media for these opinions, which is just unbelievable to me. But
yeah,
do you think that Sweden will we see something similar this year with the riots and everything else? Are we on that path now, and we're going to just see a rise of that, same as in France and Britain?
Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking of France, which I perhaps know better than Sweden and the situation there. Let me ask you, I mean, is there a program to raise especially immigrant men out of poverty and illiteracy? Is there in some kind of employment program, or are they ghettoized? Because in France, the women, female immigrants from Africa, are getting employment, and they're trying to assimilate, and the men in France are not. And you have a big problem of a large pool of unemployable men. How is it there?
I think the debate has changed a little bit when it comes to, you know, integration and assimilation have become kind of a dirty word now. It was the idea to begin with, but since the majority of the leaders in the European Union spoke out about how multiculturalism has failed, even WikiLeaks has released an email correspondence between local politicians in Gothenburg, the suburbs there, and they just basically talked about how this plan to integrate people is just a joke. It's never going to happen. We have to look at something else. So the idea now seems to be, you know, do not assimilate. Just retain your own culture where you are, and just don't kind of try to come into the Swedish society in that regard, but just kind of remain among your own and kind of like set up your own microeconomies. You're going to have a smaller country within a bigger country. That almost seems to be a mentality now, because they've just given up and they don't know what to do. They've brought in all these people. They don't have any plan B or anything like that. So it's like just in limbo, which is like must be the worst situation ever for everybody, right?
Yeah, that's a ticking time bomb, and that's what they have in France, and that ends. I mean, if there's not something to fix it or to soften it, it ends in a Lebanon scenario. You have competing societies. You have separate societies, and yeah, that. I kind of knew the answer, but I wanted to hear it from you, you know, about assimilation and integration, because that's the hypocrisy of the left. These establishment figures who don't live near immigrants, they live in these, you know, swanky neighborhoods,
exactly,
and they never rub elbows with immigrants, and they don't want to, but they first they want to continue their experiment because they're fascinated with their own intelligence and you know, or whatever. I don't know.
No, it's true. They're very idealists. They're the champagne socialists, as we call them, the Fabian faction to this particular stance, and it's very much that they feel I'm doing good in the world, I'm doing something great, and again, it's that short term thinking which is so dangerous. They think that they're doing something which is great, and in the long term, they don't see the monumental issues and problems. I mean, even some of the debates in Sweden that are considered more radical now, for example, is to not help people in Sweden, but actually help them abroad in whatever country they're in. This has been a huge debate. We have millions and millions of crowns each year being poured into asylum seekers that do not have their paperwork in order. They know that they can't get in legitimately, but they get to come to Sweden and, you know, stay, frankly, there's even old manor houses now and smaller castles that are being converted into asylum, you know, properties, which used to be, you know, part of Swedish heritage, and they're turning them into asylum seeking places, and they become literally like a great hotel that you can stay for a couple of months for free while your asylum papers are being processed before you're being sent back home again, kind of thing. And mm-hmm. and that process is like, it's just draining economically on the country. And so the radical out of the Swedish Democrats, right, they suggested that why don't we help people abroad instead, set up organizations in the countries where they actually are at and then process the paperwork there. And if everything is legit and if we want to let them into the country, do it that way. But that's like considered to be one of the most racist things ever now in Sweden, which is like the most fundamental, basic, logical processing of anything that has to do with immigrants now is just considered to be racist and out of the question. So I have no idea how this is going to, in what direction this is going to move, how this is going to improve, or how we ever going to have a debate about these issues, because we're not allowed to talk about it. And that's the most depressing, and also on top of it, the most dangerous thing, because as you say, I think it's a ticking time bomb, and consequently, people within the country, Swedish citizens, they are going to be increasingly angered about this, and they are going to be, what lengths are they going to be willing to go to take care of, you know, these issues the politicians and everyone else in the administrative class refuse to deal with, you know? That's what's dangerous mm-hmm. here.
Mm-hmm. Well said. You need to run for office.
No way. I'm staying out of that parasite hole. Oh boy. No, it's never politics. Oh my God. It's the worst ever. But nonetheless, Dale, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with? I mean, I've really enjoyed having you on, talking with you in this way. It's great. I really appreciate the reports that you have been doing out of Scandinavia for CBN. What's your next, or do you have like a couple of things lined up of what you're intending to do next, or where's things going for you?
Yeah, I still have some material from that trip to Denmark and Sweden. I'm doing something about the intolerance of the left, the Mozilla case, and also looking at the violence from the left. I interviewed the Danish expert on far left groups, Antifa and so forth. Kim, is it Mueller?
Mm-hmm.
The Dane. And so I'll be doing something like about that in the next week or so, next couple of weeks.
All right, looking forward to it. Do you have any websites or anything else you'd like to give out? Some where people can connect with you?
I'm sort of a social media slouch at the moment because I've been so busy editing tape together. But I am on Twitter, Dale Hurd, my name, DaleHurd. And on Facebook, facebook.com/DaleHurdNews, one word. And on a blog that I haven't written in forever, at cbnnews.com, Hurd on the web. So...
All right.
That's it.
Very good. We'll have those linked up, Dale. Thank you so much for coming on with us. Appreciate your perspective. Thank you for sharing it with us.
My pleasure, Henrik.
By the way, if you haven't caught our Sweden series, It's really on the Nordic model, and all the Scandinavian countries, including Norway, Denmark, and Finland. We've also done some of Iceland, of course. But catch it at redicecreations.com or redicemembers.com for the full story on the Scandinavian model and how this is being exported to the rest of the world, and how this is one of the most fundamental bad ideas that could happen to mankind. We'll be back with Red Eyes Radio in a few days. Robert Morningstar is up next about the secret space program and much more on the political situation in America and Europe as well. We also have Zoltan Istvan, Maria Kvillhaug, Daryl Hamamoto, Michelle Merl, Mikkel Klernissen, and many more. Next up, however, is Radio 314 with MK Lords on agorism, panarchism, and the Bitcoin rebellion, I guess, if you want to call it that. Please enjoy our full archives at redicemembers.com. Over 800 radio shows on all the topics that you could never imagine. Please check out our subscription and help support us that way. Thank you for listening, guys and gals. We'll talk to you in just a few days. Please take care and stay sharp.